confused by the roaring of the sea and the waves. People will faint from fear and foreboding of what is coming upon the world, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Now, when these things begin to take place, stand up and raise your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. Then Jesus told them a parable. Look at the fig tree and all the trees. As soon as they sprout leaves, you can see for yourselves and know that summer is already near. So also, when you see these things taking place, you know that the kingdom of God is near. Truly, I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Be on guard, so that your hearts are not weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness and the worries of this life, and that day catch you unexpectedly like a trap. For it will come upon all who live on the face of the whole earth. Be alert at all times, praying that you may have the strength to escape all these things that will take place and to stand before the Son of Man. The Gospel of the Lord. It's second grade, and my brother, sitting on the school bus next to the window, for whatever reason, sticks his hand down between the seat and the outside of the school bus, and then when he pulls his hand out, he has in it $40 in cash. Now, the difference between my brother and me is that my brother immediately knew what he was going to do with that $40, and that is that he pushed me aside. I'd like to think that he said, excuse me, and let me move out of the way, but he was my big brother, and so he told me just to get out of the way, and he took that $40 straight to the bus driver and said, I found this on the between the seat and the wall of the bus. Which was fascinating because I had already started in my mind running how I was going to spend the $40. It was the next morning we pulled into the front of Newville Elementary in Newville, Pennsylvania, and we're all sitting on the buses waiting for permission to leave the buses and go into the school, and this young woman walks onto the bus. She was obviously much older because she looked cool. She was in seventh grade. We were in second grade. That was a really cool thing. And she talks to the bus driver, and we're all sitting there wondering what is going on. The bus driver points to my brother. This young woman comes back to my brother, and she said, that was my $40 that you found. Thank you for finding that for me. And then she hands him $5 as a way of thanking him for being honest. What a great thing to do the right thing. The question I would have is how many of us would do the right thing if we knew that no one was going to tell us thank you and that there was not going to be a reward for doing it? That we would do it just because we believed it was right. We're looking at the first lesson today from the prophet Jeremiah. The prophet Jeremiah is challenging God's people in Judah, their capital city of Jerusalem, because they aren't doing what is right. God's people had been in a major time of reform. it was King Josiah that was really leading the people into this great time of reform. They were getting back to the basics, getting back to the core values of who they were. There's a great sense of nationalism that came out of doing what they thought was right. And then the king died. And at that moment, the reforms came to a stop. And the country started to deteriorate because the reforms weren't happening, and this nationalistic pride just crumbled around them. Now, in the midst of that time, when the people of that country were feeling that they were on the verge of falling over a cliff, does that sound familiar to you? There were those in the midst of the people, those prophets who said to the people, "It's not going to be bad. It's not going to get worse. Everything is okay." But Jeremiah warns the people about too quickly accepting those who give you immediate words of comfort. For what he tells them is that they have not done what is right, and as a consequence, they are going to struggle. God's people in that day and age had put their trust in their institutions. They had put their trust in the Ark of the Covenant, which held God's law. They had put their trust in the rite of circumcision. You know, all of those rites that we have that help make sense and work for us. And one of my favorite commercials is the sporting commercials where people are doing all of their superstitious acts before sporting events. And the last line is, "It's only weird if it doesn't work." You know, we all have those rituals that we hold on to that make it work. They were putting their trust in the rituals. They're putting their trust in the Torah, that is some document that told them what they were supposed to do, and their trust in sacrifice in the temple itself, that somehow the building would protect them from what they had going on around them. And in this time of trust in all of these things that weren't going to do them any good, the social fabric started to tear. The outward signs of the problem were that people started to practice idolatry. And in Jeremiah's day, that meant that they started to make oat cakes that they sacrificed to a goddess of another religion. They brought back the practice of child sacrifice in a valley south of the city. They started to engage in all of these pagan practices, and even in the temple itself, they put up a statue of a pagan god. And what Jeremiah tells them is that they have done something wrong, and for that, they are going to be judged. Now, here's where we run into problems in our time as people, is that we have a problem with a God who judges. You know, we talk about the Old Testament as being law and the New Testament as being grace, and we like the grace part. We like the New Testament because it's about love and forgiveness, and the Old Testament is that it's old, and so we don't have to hold on to it. But we need to understand that in the day of Jeremiah, God's people did not have a problem with God's judgment. They understood it to be part of their faith lives. And that part of God's very nature was, first of all, that of justice. People will be rewarded for what they do right and punished for what they do wrong. But also part of God's nature is that of mercy. Not one or the other, but the two opposites brought together. God is justice and God is mercy. How do you bring those two opposites together, and what comes out of those opposites coming together? What comes out of the opposites is that in those two ways of being, God provides people the opportunity to make things right. Judges the people for what they have done wrong, points that out to them, and then in mercy gives them the opportunity to make things right. It's rooted in what Jesus teaches in the New Testament. You have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, if one person slaps your cheek, you give them the other. Are we supposed to pick one or the other? No, but in what Jesus is teaching, you give the person an opportunity to make things right. And we are sorely lacking as people the gift of giving people the opportunity to make things right. We do that in our personal relationships. Someone wrongs us. We hold on to that wrong and the resentment and the pain that comes out of it. My wife and I joke that she has a ledger that started the first day that we met, and she has kept track of everything I have done wrong. She's about on her 25th or 30th volume now. I can't remember how far it is. This huge tomes of work. The book on her has only one sentence so far, which was, I married him. Do we give the person in that relationship, by confronting them with what they have done wrong through courage, the opportunity to make it right? It's at the heart of what we talk about with our criminal justice system ministry here in this congregation, that we take those who have committed a crime, who have made a choice that leads to consequences, many times tragic consequences, and we hold them accountable. But we also give them the opportunity to make it right. We can't give a person an opportunity to make it right if we let them off the hook instead of confronting them with what they have done wrong. At the same time, we deprive people of the opportunity to make it right when they come out of prison after serving their consequence, by not letting them live in our neighborhoods with us, not seeing that they have jobs, being unsure if we want to even sit with them in worship for fear of what might happen. Giving people the opportunity to make things right is rooted in what God does by bringing justice and mercy together. Jeremiah tells us that the reason that we get ourselves into trouble is because there is something wrong with our hearts. It is in chapter 4 of Jeremiah that he writes, "Your ways and your doings have brought these things upon you. This is your doom, and it is bitter. It has reached your very heart," that our hearts are placed in the wrong place. Jeremiah goes on to say the problem with the hearts is that our hearts lie to us. He writes, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately corrupt. Who can understand the heart?" So not only does our heart lead us to do things wrong, but then our heart tells us that what we've done wrong is really okay. How do we heal the human heart? One such option is that of self-awareness, and there are many opportunities to gain self-awareness, and self-awareness is a good practice, but I don't think it takes us far enough as Christians. There's a story of an adult man who for months had having a problem with wetting the bed at night, and he couldn't figure out what was going on, and he finally went to see someone who talked himself through it. And he was sitting down with his friend one day, and he said to his friend, "I have great news." And his friend said, "What?" He said, "I figured out why I'm wetting the bed at night." And his friend says, "Great, so you're not wetting the bed anymore." He goes, "No, I still wet the bed, but at least I know why I'm doing it now." Self-awareness is helpful, but does it change the heart? We as Christians hold fast that there's only one way that the human heart changes. and that is through the power of the Spirit of God. That God changes human hearts. When God is present in our lives, when God is acting in our lives, when God is showing justice and mercy to us and giving us the opportunity to make things right, God changes the human heart. I think part of the place then where we run into trouble is that we misplace the concept of humility. Micah 6:8 gives us that well-known line that we are to love justice and to do mercy, which captures the essence of what I talked about earlier. But Micah adds that third piece, walk humbly with your God. The problem we have is that our humility is shown to one another and not to God. And so we put ourselves down in front of other people. Well, you know how I am. You know, I'm trying my best. You know what I've been going through. I'm not sure if I can do much more than what I'm already doing. And we show that humility to others. But think about the message you're sending to God when you make those claims. That God does not have the power to change you. That what God does is not enough. It is our humility with God that makes a difference. To realize only through the power of the Spirit of God are we transformed. That allows us to change our language with one another, to use language that is stronger. Have you noticed that we have stopped using words that are strong, that are challenging? It calls us to have courage, to have courage to believe in God, to hold fast to the values that come out of that faith. Instead of keep asking things over and over again, the courage to make a decision. I contend that Christians won't always be called humble, but will be called arrogant at times, too self-assured at times, self-righteous at times, because we have the courage to hold fast to who we are as God's people. So how do you identify those things of which you are afraid? In the gospel lesson today, Jesus teaches, be on your guard so you're not weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness, and then says, and the worries of this life. The literal translation of the word worries here is head wrestling. Now, I'm not talking about what my son and I do when we butt heads because he's right and I'm right and we can't agree on who's going to be right. Head wrestling is that moment when you experience something and what do? Do you find yourself in that position at times? When you open your mouth in that moment and what comes out isn't helpful? When you realize you should have been over here doing something and you were over here instead? When you're confronted with how you have hurt someone and you didn't even realize it? How do you head wrestle? Because that will help you to identify your fears And it can even be rooted in when someone says something that frustrates you so much, you head wrestle. It might be less about that person being wrong and more about what you're afraid of. And what Jesus teaches us is that you can stand in the presence of God. That when your head is down, Jesus takes you by the chin, lifts up your head, and allows you to stand in the presence of God. Because this is a God who gives us the hope that we can make things right. Amen.